Chapter 5. So comfortable. Left to herself, the old woman turned once more to the window. How lovely the view was that day. The blue sky with its round clouds shed a brightness over everything. The ailanthus had put on a tinge of yellow-green. The hyacinths were budding. The magnolia flowers looked more than ever like rosettes carved in alabaster. Soon the wisteria would bloom, then the horse chestnut. But not for her. Between her eyes and them a barrier of brick and mortar would swiftly rise. Presently even the spire would disappear, and all her radiant world be blotted out. Mrs. Manstey sent away untouched the dinner tray brought to her that evening. She lingered in the window until the windy sunset died in bat-colored dusk. Then, going to bed, she lay sleepless all night. Early the next day she was up and at the window. It was raining, but even through the slanting gray gauze the scene had its charm, and then the rain was so good for the trees. As he had noticed the day before, that the ailanthus was growing moldy. "Of course I might move," said Mrs. Manstey aloud, and turning from the window she looked about her room. She might move, of course. So might she be flayed alive. But she was not likely to survive either operation. The room, though far less important to her happiness than the view, was as much a part of her existence as he had lived in it 17 years. She knew every stain on the wallpaper, every rent in the carpet. The light fell in a certain way on her engravings. Her books had grown shabby on their shelves. Her bulbs and ivy were used to their window, and knew which way to lean to the sun. "Ye are all too old to move," she said. That afternoon it cleared. Wet and radiant the blue reappeared through torn rags of cloud. The ailanthus sparkled. The earth in the flower borders looked rich and warm. It was Thursday, and on Monday the building of the extension was to begin. On Sunday afternoon a card was brought to Mrs. Black, as she was engaged in gathering up the fragments of the boarders' dinner in the basement. The card, black-edged, bore Mrs. Manstey's name. "One of Mrs. Sampson's boarders. Wants to move, I suppose. Well, I can give her a room next year in the extension." "Dinah," said Mrs. Black, "tell the lady I'll be upstairs in a minute." Mrs. Black found Mrs. Manstey standing in the long parlor garnished with statuettes and antimacassars. In that house she could not sit down. Stooping hurriedly to open the register, which let out a cloud of dust, Mrs. Black advanced on her visitor. "I'm happy to meet you, Mrs. Manstey. Take a seat, please," the landlady remarked in her prosperous voice, the voice of a woman who can afford to build extensions. There was no help for it. Mrs. Manstey sat down. "Is there anything I can do for you, ma'am?" Mrs. Black continued. "My house is full at present, but I am going to build an extension, and it is about the extension that I wish to speak," said Mrs. Manstey, suddenly. "I'm a poor woman, Mrs. Black, and I have never been a happy one. I shall have to talk about myself first to make you understand." Mrs. Black, astonished but imperturbable, bowed at this parenthesis. "I never had what I wanted," Mrs. Manstey continued. "Tea was always one disappointment after another. For years I wanted to live in the country. I dreamed and dreamed about it, but we never could manage it. There was no sunny window in our house, and so all my plants died. My daughter married years ago, and went away besides. She never cared for the same things. Then my husband died, and I was left alone. That was 17 years ago. I went to live at Mrs. Sampson's, and I have been there ever since. I have grown a little infirm, as you see, and I don't get out often, only on fine days, if I am feeling very well. So you can understand my sitting a great deal in my window, the back window on the third floor." "Well, Mrs. Manstey," said Mrs. Black, liberally, "I could give you a back room, I dare say. One of the new rooms, in the X, but I don't want to move. I can't move," said Mrs. Manstey, almost with a scream. "And I came to tell you that, if you build that extension I shall have no view from my window, no view. Do you understand?" Mrs. Black thought herself face, to face with a lunatic, and she had always heard that lunatics must be humored. Dear me, she remarked, pushing her chair back a little way. That is too bad, isn't it? Why, I never thought of that. To be sure, the extension will interfere with your view, Mrs. Manstey. You do understand? Mrs. Manstey gasped. Of course I do. And I'm real sorry about it too. But there, don't be worry, Mrs. Manstey. I guess we can fix that all right. Mrs. Manstey rose from her seat, and Mrs. Black slipped toward the door. What do you mean by fixing it? Do you mean that I can induce you to change your mind about the extension? Oh, Mrs. Black, listen to me. I have $2,000 in the bank, and I know I could manage, to give you $1,000, if Mrs. Manstey paused. The tears were rolling down her cheeks. There, Mrs. Manstey, don't be worry, repeated Mrs. Black, soothingly. I'm sure we can settle it. I am sorry that I can't stay and talk about it any longer, but this is such a busy time of day, with supper to get, her H, and was on the doorknob, but with sudden vigor Mrs. Manstey seized her wrist. You are not giving me a definite answer. Do you mean to say that you accept my proposition? Why, I'll think it over, Mrs. Manstey, certainly I will. I wouldn't annoy you for the world, but the work is to begin tomorrow, I am told, Mrs. Manstey persisted. Mrs. Black hesitated. Tea shan't begin, I promise you that. I'll send word to the builder this very night. Mrs. Manstey tightened her hold. You are not deceiving me, are you? She said. No, stammered Mrs. Black. How can you think such a thing of me, Mrs. Manstey? Slowly Mrs. Manstey's clutch relaxed, and she passed through the open door. $1,000, she repeated, pausing in the hall. Then she let herself out of the house and hobbled down the steps, supporting herself on the cast iron railing. My goodness, exclaimed Mrs. Black, shutting and bolting the hall door. I never knew the old woman was crazy. And she looks so quiet and ladylike too. Mrs. Manstey slept well that night, but early the next morning she was awakened by a sound of hammering. She got to her window with what haste she might, and, looking out, saw that Mrs. Black's yard was full of workmen. Some were carrying loads of brick from the kitchen to the yard, others beginning to demolish the old-fashioned wooden balcony which adorned each story of Mrs. Black's house. Mrs. Manstey saw that as he had been deceived. At first she thought of confiding her trouble to Mrs. Sampson, but a settled discouragement soon took possession of her, and she went back to bed, not caring to see what was going on. Toward afternoon, however, feeling that she must know the worst, she rose and dressed herself. It was a laborious task, for her hands were stiffer than usual, and the hooks and buttons seemed to evade her. When she seated herself in the window, she saw that the workmen had removed the upper part of the balcony, and that the bricks had multiplied since morning. One of the men, a coarse fellow with a bloated face, picked a magnolia blossom, and, after smelling it, threw it to the ground. The next man, carrying a load of bricks, trod on the flower in passing. Look out, Jim, called one of the men to another who was smoking a pipe. If you throw matches around near those barrels of paper, you'll have the old tinder box burning down before you know it. And Mrs. Manstey, leaning forward, perceived that there were several barrels of paper and rubbish under the wooden balcony. At length the work ceased and twilight fell. The sunset was perfect, and a roseate light, transfiguring the distant spire, lingered late in the west. When it grew dark, Mrs. Manstey drew down the shades and proceeded, in her usual methodical manner, to light her lamp. She always filled and lit it with her own hands, keeping a kettle of kerosene on a zinc-covered shelf in a closet. As the lamplight filled the room, it assumed its usual peaceful aspect. The books and pictures and plants seemed, like their mistress, to settle themselves down for another quiet evening, and Mrs. Manstey, as was her wont, drew up her armchair to the table, and began to knit. That night she could not sleep. The weather had changed and a wild wind was abroad, blotting the stars with close-driven clouds. Mrs. Manstey rose once or twice, and looked out of the window, but of the view nothing was discernible save a tardy light or two in the opposite windows. These lights at last went out, and Mrs. Manstey, who had watched for their extinction, began to dress herself. She was in evident haste, for she merely flung a thin dressing gown over her nightdress, and wrapped her head in a scarf. Then she opened her closet and cautiously took out the kettle of kerosene. Having slipped a bundle of wooden matches into her pocket, she proceeded, with increasing precautions, to unlock her door, and a few moments later she was feeling her way down the dark staircase, led by a glimmer of gas from the lower hall. At length she reached the bottom of the stairs, and began the more difficult descent into the utter darkness of the basement. Here, however, she could move more freely, as there was less danger of being overheard, and without much delay she contrived to unlock the iron door leading into the yard. A gust of cold wind smote her as she stepped out, and groped shiveringly under the clotheslines. That morning at 3 o'clock an alarm of fire brought the engines to Mrs. Black's door, and also brought Mrs. Sampson's startled boarders to their windows. The wooden balcony at the back of Mrs. Black's house was ablaze, and among those who watched the progress of the flames was Mrs. Manstey, leaning in her thin dressing gown from the open window. The fire, however, was soon put out, and the frightened occupants of the house, who had fled in scant attire, reassembled at dawn to find that little mischief had been done beyond the cracking of window panes and smoking of ceilings. In fact, the chief sufferer by the fire was Mrs. Manstey, who was found in the morning gasping with pneumonia, a not unnatural result, as everyone remarked, of her having hung out of an open window at her age in a dressing gown. It was easy to see that she was very ill, but no one had guessed how grave the doctor's verdict would be, and the faces gathered that evening about Mrs. Sampson's table were awestruck and disturbed. Not that any of the boarders knew Mrs. Manstey well. She kept to herself, as they said, and seemed to fancy herself too good for them. But then it is always disagreeable to have anyone dying in the house, and, as one lady observed to another, "Colin, it might just as well have been you or me, my dear." But it was only Mrs. Manstey, and she was dying, as he had lived, lonely if not alone. The doctor had sent a trained nurse, and Mrs. Sampson, with muffled step, came in from time to time, but both, to Mrs. Manstey, seemed remote and unsubstantial as the figures in a dream. All day she said nothing, but when she was asked for her daughter's address she shook her head. At times the nurse noticed that she seemed to be listening attentively for some sound which did not come, then again she dozed. The next morning at daylight she was very low. The nurse called Mrs. Sampson, and as the two bent over the old woman they saw her lips move. "Lift me up out of bed," she whispered. They raised her in their arms, and with her stiff hand she pointed to the window. "Oh, the window, she wants to sit in the window. She used to sit there all day," Mrs. Sampson explained. "Tea can do her no harm, I suppose?" "Nothing matters now," said the nurse. They carried Mrs. Manstey to the window, and placed her in her chair. The dawn was abroad, a jubilant spring dawn. The spire had already caught a golden ray, though the magnolia and horse chestnut still slumbered in shadow. In Mrs. Black's yard all was quiet. The charred timbers of the balcony lay where they had fallen. It was evident that since the fire the builders had not returned to their work. The magnolia had unfolded a few more sculptural flowers. The view was undisturbed. It was hard for Mrs. Manstey to breathe. Each moment it grew more difficult. She tried to make them open the window, but they would not understand. If she could have tasted the air, sweet with the penetrating ailanthus savor, it would have eased her. But the view, at least, was there. The spire was golden now, the heavens had warmed from pearl to blue, day was alight from east to west, even the magnolia had caught the sun. Mrs. Manstey's head fell back and smiling she died. That day the building of the extension was resumed. The end. The bolted door is first published in Scribner's Magazine, March 1909. I, Hubert Grannis, pacing the length of his pleasant lamp-lit library, paused to compare his watch with the clock on the chimneypiece. 3 minutes to 8. In exactly 3 minutes, Mr. Peter Asham, of the eminent legal firm of Asham and Pedlow, would have his punctual hand on the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.